than she is this morning. As Wes said earlier, seems like there is a smaller crowd than normal. And look around you and see who's not here, and you may want to check on them. We'll hope that it is not sickness that is keeping people away. But anyway, check on those that normally sit around you and that are not here. A couple of other announcements before I get into the lesson this morning. We decided that the meeting time change, that is, well, let me just put it simply like this. We will be meeting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon through March. We want to give it a try through the winter months. Hopefully that will help some that have more difficulty driving in the dark and driving at night. So we're going to go through March with the current time at 4 o'clock. So take note of that. Speaking of that, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, we're going to have a special lesson. I'd like for you to grab a bulletin and notice the details on two upcoming sermons. But this afternoon, I'm going to try to do a prayer request type lesson. Now, I'll talk more about it this afternoon, but basically, if you've got things you would like for us to pray about, you've got requests, be thinking about that this afternoon, bring those with you, and if you will, write them out even. And that would be helpful, especially you ladies, I'd like for you to write those out. Next Sunday morning, and those of you that are veterans here, you know that from time to time I do a question and answer sermon, and I'm going to do one of those next Sunday morning. Seems to be something that a lot of you really like. I'm going to talk about our giving, our contribution, as we've just done it. And questions that you have, anything about that, anything about our giving, our tithing, all of that kind of thing, be prepared with questions along those lines, and I'll do the best I can with them next Sunday. So keep all of that in mind, and without any further delay, let's get into the lesson. We are talking about this year, for those of you that might be visiting, and we welcome you if you are, but we are talking about fulfilling my purpose. We're entering our fourth quarter. We have talked about previously fulfilling my purpose in my church, fulfilling my purpose in my family. Last quarter, we emphasized fulfilling my purpose in my work, and beginning with this morning's lesson, we want to begin to talk about fulfilling my purpose in my recreation. Now, that might seem, again, an odd choice, and yet I think as we explore different things this quarter, we'll find out that it's not. But my purpose at my leisure, we're going to talk about those things this quarter. So let me get right into that. What is recreation? You might find this an interesting term. I find it so, and you may as well. But if we were to look back and look at a proper definition of recreation, and someone would tell us, it is an activity of leisure. It is something that we do during our discretionary time. That is, my time, my free time is a term that's used quite a bit. Time when I can choose to do what I want to do is the idea. My discretionary time. We do those things for relaxation. We do those things for amusement, for physical exercise, especially if you're someone like me or perhaps Wes, where a lot of your time is spent, and I call it sedentary. You know, I'm just kind of sitting. I'm either in front of a computer, I'm across the table from someone, I'm sitting in a living room somewhere, but it's a lot of sitting is the point. And so you want to move around. If not, then you're going to do like you saw me several years back. You're going to balloon up to where you weigh way more than you should weigh, and you want to do some things to get some of that off. By the way, incidentally, this past week, down 135 pounds for those of you that are interested in that, and still moving in the right direction. So, but physical exercise, pleasure, we do those things for pleasure. Enjoyment is something that's done for fun. That's our recreation. But while it is for enjoyment, and I want us to think a little deeper about it in one part of the emphasis this quarter. While we do it for enjoyment, it's viewed as a means of refreshment. And, recharging the batteries type thing. A diversion from what you're doing. Sometimes I will take the car and go park somewhere and walk in a big parking lot or whatever. But a lot of times if I really get stressed out about something, I have a hard session with somebody or I've spent several hours working or whatever, I might do that. I might just, say I need to go to the post office or the bank and park the car and walk a few blocks around while I go. That kind of thing. But it's a time to divert from that, to think, to open my mind up, sometimes to pray. But it's a diversion. And so it's considered, and if we think about that kind of thing, it's considered to be an essential element of human biology and, of course, psychology. You need it for your body, and you need it for your mind. Now, you might find this interesting, and I particularly do. I love words and where they come from and all of that kind of thing. And looking at the etymology, what it means now and how we got the meaning we have today from where it came from. If you're reading already, you see that recreation is a Middle English term from the Anglo-French, virtually recreation. But it in turn came from Latin, recreatio or recreatio. That is a restoration to health. And if you notice what I put up here, it is from a Latin term that's a compound term, re, which means to do something over or do it again, and the word for create. So recreation, literally re-creation. And if you notice, it's a word that means to restore, refresh, bring back to health. And if you look back at when it was first used, and the first reference most people can find is in the 1300s, Middle English, of course, but it was used in talking about someone who had been very ill, who had been restored to health. He had, as it were, been recreated. And so it was used for the refreshment or curing of a sick person, and for a while, that's the only way the word was used. Now think about that for a moment. We use terms like recuperate or convalescence. Or we just, you know, down south we just say somebody got better, you know. But the idea is that they are restored to health, and yet we don't use the term recreation for that. Recreation immediately conjures up visions of the park or ball fields or gyms or television or all of those kinds of things, vacations and so forth, but not this idea. And yet this is the idea behind the modern day idea. So we're going to touch on that from time to time. Now, let's back up and ask a very simple question. I've had this asked of me before. People that are very serious and very dedicated to living a Christian life. Should Christians take time for recreation? Now, I want you to stop to think about that question. Before you jump all over it, stop to think about the question for a moment. I'm not going to go deeply into the history this morning, but let me mention it. If we were to go back in time, not too far back, but if we were to go back in time, we would realize that recreation did not hold the same place for our ancestors, probably not even our grandparents, that it anywhere close to what it holds today. That if we talked about recreation, we would talk about something that was a very small part of life. And what we've witnessed is it growing in prominence. We're going to talk more and more about that in the lessons that are coming up. But more and more a part of our life. So Christians, honest Christians, dedicated Christians, begin to look at that and say, wait a minute. All of this diversion we're taking, isn't it really that we are supposed to be working? And John 9 and verse 4, just like Jesus said, you might want to turn over there. I must work the works of Him that sent me while it is day. Isn't it my day now, and I should be working, and the rest, if you will, the recreation, the restoration, etc., well, that's for after I die. And judgment day, when I am spiritually recreated. And so shouldn't I be like Jesus, interested in working while I've got time to work? I mean, after all, if we're honest, we only have so much of a productive life. There are so many hours we have. Young people don't like to think about that. Older people have to think about that. But there's only so much time we have. And should I not be spending it working for the Lord instead of engaging in recreation? In fact, I'll go a step further. We sing songs that really intimate this idea. For example, work, for the night is coming. The day is coming when man's work is done. Labor now, labor for the master. Think about all of those songs and all of those lyrics we sing, and the idea that's being intimated in those songs, the poets are saying, you're running out of time every day. Get busy, do the work. And if you have spare time, free time, then work. If you're not having to spend time earning bread for your family, then do something for the master. But the idea is work. Work until you go to sleep and get up and work again. And really, in times past, that was the mentality. You worked all day until you were too tired to work anymore. You went to bed, you slept, and when you got up, you went to work again. And that's what people did. And so, looking at this and saying, should Christians really be taking all this time for recreation is a valid question. Now, I'm not giving you the answer yet. I'm about to. Okay? But it's a valid question. So I might be tempted to say, well, nothing wrong with recreation. If I go play a game of basketball or Wes runs a marathon, there's nothing wrong with that. Leave it at that. Well, it's a valid question. So Jesus said, I must work the works of Him that sent me. And in fact, if we were to look at further in the New Testament, Galatians chapter 6, and turn over there with me. In Galatians 6, Paul would say it like this. Let us not be weary, verse 9, or let us not grow weary in well-doing, in doing good. So in other words, you're always supposed to be doing good, for in due season we shall reap. And see, that's the idea of looking ahead to the future, when you reap your reward, if we faint not. If we don't get tired and worn out from doing all the good we're supposed to be doing. And as we have, therefore, opportunity. Someone might look at this question and say, you know, you've got opportunity to work. And if you're taking the opportunity of your time, if it's discretionary, and you're saying, let me go play instead of work, is that right? I want you to hold on to that question for a moment. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially to those of the household of faith. So it's a huge question. How much should a Christian really be focusing on recreation? I want to suggest to you, going back to the idea of the Word, and the Word is, you know, the idea is important, so let's go back to it. That there is restorative value in recreation. In other words, what I said a moment ago, think back to the illustration I was using earlier. I go have a hard session with someone. It affects me. If someone tells me of something that's really hurting them, it affects me. I care. You have compassion on people, you care. You get mentally involved in something. Or I study for a few hours, and what I find is that if I continue to stare at a screen and I'm tired, I'm less effective. That happened the other day when I was preparing this lesson. I just kind of hit a wall. And I had worked a number of hours that day, but I hit a wall and it was like, okay, I can't make this work. I'm not getting anywhere. And sometimes you need to restore. You need to get back to where you are efficient, is the idea. And the idea in recreation is not a time, it's not the idea, and I want you to hear this carefully if you miss everything else. The idea in recreation, if it is right, is not to waste time. I've got a real problem with wasting time. Wasting time means that it went for nothing of value, no good. And there's just something about me that says, don't waste time. And yet, we're not talking about that. We're talking about restoring. We're talking about value. I want to suggest to you, and I'd like for you to go back with me to Genesis chapter 2 for a moment, and I want you to think about something that the Bible teaches us from the beginning. And you know this, and yet maybe we don't connect this to recreation, but let's do it this morning. In Genesis chapter 2, God had spent 6 days creating the earth. He had worked. Now, He is God. And I want to suggest to you that I am convinced 100%, that God could have spent 6 million years straight working. That He is God, and the Bible teaches us He is the God of all strength, all power, all might, etc., etc. What I'm saying in that is that God does not need to rest. Okay? But He did. And the Bible teaches us clearly. And one of the strangest things, and maybe you, like I was as a little kid, read this for the first time and you read, On the seventh day, God ended His work which He had made, and He rested. And you look back, you know, you've been taught some things about God and how powerful God is, and you say, why does God need to rest? Did God go to sleep? Well, the Bible doesn't say that. It says He rested. He didn't sleep. But why does God need to rest? And we look at this and we say, we listen to Moses and what Moses is saying. He rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, or the Sabbath, and he sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. And of course, Moses will then take it to Exodus 20 and give the one of the Ten Commandments, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, for in 6 days God created the earth and on the seventh day he rested. Why did God rest? And I believe that it is because it is for an example. I don't think that God, like you and I, needed to rest. If I'm wrong about that, I stand corrected. But I don't believe that God, in the state of being God, needed to rest, and yet He did it as an example to then in turn say to man, you do your work, and when you finish your work, you rest. And that there is restorative value in resting. Resting being a part of recreation, because the very idea of rest is to cease from doing what you're doing and do something else. It might be sleep, it might be an activity, but it is a diversion away from the normal activity, which is work. God worked, God rested, and now God says, you go and do likewise. And that there are things in the Bible like that where we would look at it and say, God did not need to do that. And yet God did it as an example to then turn to us and say, you go do the same thing. I'll give you an example of Jesus. Jesus should have been bowed down to, his feet washed, he should have been served, and yet he got a towel, bent down, washed their feet, and said, now you go do the same thing. If I, your master, can do that, then you can do that. God does things as an example. Now let's go further with that. Look with me at John 4 again, and this is the passage that we want to focus on here. In John 4, we do see Jesus. Of course, He is the Son of God, and yet now He is in the form of a human body. Okay, so He has a human body. And the Bible tells us that He was journeying from Galilee down south, and He must needs go through Samaria if He's going to do that. Well, He comes to Jacob's well. And if we listen to verse 6, notice what it says. Now, Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey. So I take exception that Galatians 6 means work till you drop, and if you're able to keep going and you don't faint or grow weary, then you'll go to heaven. That's not what Galatians 6 is saying. Galatians 6 speaks of the overall life of a Christian and the work they do as a Christian, what they're sowing and so forth, to the point, to the view that they will reap someday when they eternally rest from their labors. That has nothing to do with daily activity and saying you cannot ever take rest. That would be ludicrous. And if we look at the example of Jesus, here is Jesus, the Son of God. He had walked on this journey. He was doing His work. He got tired. In fact, He got really tired. He was wearied with His journey. So notice in verse 6, He sat down. So if the Lord can do that, so can I. You know, if I can work and get tired from my work to the point that I'm weary, then I can sit down. And there isn't anything wrong with that. And you know, being a workaholic notwithstanding, and I come from a family of workaholics. My grandfather worked day and night. That's all I ever saw him do. I never saw him do anything, hardly ever, for leisure. And if he did, it was always with an urgency to get back home and work 7 days a week. My father is much like that. Not quite as bad, but pretty much like that. He works. He's 80 years old. He still has a full-time job. He loves it. He goes to it. He comes home and works. So naturally, they passed on to me. You work all the time, 7 days a week, and if you don't feel bad about it, because that's what we do. Well, that's not what God is teaching. Work, get tired, sit down. Nothing wrong with that. Let's go further. Let's look at Mark chapter 6, the passage we had read for us, and let's go back and note again what Jesus said. The apostles have been on a journey. They have been working. They come home from their journey. They come home from working. And if you'll drop down to verse 30, I'm in the right place. Drop down to verse 30. Notice the apostles gathered themselves together to Jesus, and they reported. Jesus, here's what we've been doing. They talked about what they had done, their work. They talked about what they had taught, their work. They've been working. They've done a lot of work. They come back to Jesus and they report. And notice Jesus, verse 31. That's good, boys. Now, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to do. He said to them, "Come ye yourselves apart into a desert or secluded place and rest a while." Why is the Lord telling them to do that? Because they've been working hard. And if they're going to be at peak performance, then they're going to need to rest. And they're going to be apostles, and they're going to spend the rest of their lives, this is a microcosm of their life from now on. They will go out, and they will do things, and they will teach things, and they will get tired, and even if they're all fired up about it, and we get that way. You know, sometimes we have a good day at work and our adrenaline is flowing and we're bubbling over and so forth. We feel like we could work 10 more hours and not stop. And yet, here's what the Lord, God Almighty, would be saying. That's great. Now rest a while. Stop. Take your rest. And if you notice, He says, not that there was an opportunity to do more. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. So there's a big crowd of people, and there's going to be a lot more teaching. And He's even going to look on them, as the passage says, with compassion and do it. But Peter, Andrew, you guys, rest a while. Stop. And that's exactly what we need to do. We need to hit it and get it, as I sometimes say. And when we've hit it, and we've gotten it, we need to stop. We need to rest, recharge, recreate, be back to where we're able to hit it and get it again at full peak performance. And that's not going to happen if you wear yourself out every day. You're going to get up tired. You're going to get up sluggish. Your mind is going to begin to work on you about how little value there is in doing what you do. Why am I doing all of this anyway? I don't like it. I don't want to do it. All of that's going to happen because your body is saying, God made you to stop. And He made you to sit down. And He made you, when you finish your work, to rest. And He made you to take a moment to recharge, recreate. And here's our Master saying to do that. One final passage. Look with me at 1 Timothy chapter 4. Now, I started to begin with this passage. When I started thinking, okay, what am I going to talk about quarter 4, recreation? The first passage that came to mind was 1 Timothy 4. And then I thought, no, I want to begin with some other things, as naturally I have them up here. But let's read 1 Timothy 4. And notice what Paul says. And he says it to young Timothy. And it's in a context of him being a... And you can read this paragraph. I'm not going to this morning. But it's in a context of you be a good example of everything a Christian needs to be, Timothy. And here's what he says. Refuse profane and old wives' fables, verse 7. And notice the second half of verse 7. And exercise yourself rather unto godliness. Now it's interesting here, the word exercise, because it is a word that's used for an athlete. Training, going through training and all of that. Now, we could easily take a lesson, if this were the lesson this morning, and we could talk about how if you want to be a good Christian, you want to be a performing Christian, righteous person, doing everything you need to do, you have to train yourself for that. It doesn't just happen. You don't just pop up out of the waters of baptism like an angel, you know, touch you on the shoulder with a wand, bing, go out and be perfect. It doesn't happen that way. You've got to train. And it's just like, okay, I want to play baseball really well. All right, fine, but it's going to take thousands of hours of work if you want to get there. I want to be a really good Christian. Great. But it's going to take thousands and thousands of hours to get there, and that's what verse 7 is saying. Now notice what he does with it, though. He goes to verse 8 and he says 4, which means he's drawing a parallel. Sometimes we read verse 8, bodily exercise profits little, and the idea of some people who would revert back to the depression is, you see, there's no value in bodily exercise. There's only value in spiritual exercise. That's not what Paul is doing here. Paul is saying, no, you got to train yourself like an athlete would go out and train if you want to be a good Christian performing at the level you want to perform. But it's just like your bodily exercise. And he's not talking about, you know, getting up in the morning and doing 10 or 12 bendovers here. He's talking about the athlete who trains. Wes, if I'm not mistaken, coming up sometime shortly, you've got a marathon. A lot of training goes into that every time, right? Got to run so many miles. Yeah, all that. So a lot of training. That's what he's talking about here. You don't just go out, step out the front door, run a marathon. Nobody does. You get sick, and if you push it, you die. But you train yourself. Bodily exercise, that is, that training, does profit. And that's literally what it says in the original, and some modern translations have intimated that with the passage. It does profit you. It profits you in this life, and really this life only. There's a short amount of time of your existence where you're going to need to exercise, move, train your body. So your body will be in good shape. And I want to suggest this to you. If you don't know this by now, then I will tell you this honestly. Weighing 135 pounds less than I weighed 4 years ago, I can do my spiritual work much better than I could do it then. Then it nearly killed me to get up and walk up and down the stairs. Now, with most days anyway, you know, but now I get up and walk up and down the stairs and it's nothing. I go do what I've got to do and there isn't any, you know, nothing. It's no problem at all. And that's what Paul is saying here in this passage. You need the bodily exercise. I mean, Timothy, don't get caught up in just doing the work you've got to do and forget that, yeah, we need to take a little time. Even our Lord said that. So take the time. And I believe that's what he's saying here. Devote your, you know, a little time in your life to the physical, not just what you've got to do in the mental. Because all of it is part of the spiritual. And I believe that. I know that it is easy to say the holistic approach, that is focusing on every part of man, is just a modern idea and there's nothing in the Bible about it. Well, you've heard this morning that I disagree with that. No, God does pay attention to the physical. From the beginning, Genesis 2, all the way to the New Testament. So let's close with a couple of remarks. Recreational activities have increased in our society, and I think in direct proportion to two things. Number one, increased longevity. Put that in simple terms, we live longer. So we have retirement. And we have time, years even sometimes, when we can spend doing what we want to do. We need to think about what it is we really want to do. But there's also decreased demand for financial and physical survival. Go back to the days of our grandparents, great-grandparents, or whatever it was, but back to the generation that had to get up in the morning, and if they were going to survive, they had to work all day long until they hit the sack that night. And there was very little time to get the work done. I give you one quick illustration. If you want to wash the clothes today, most of you come running in, and before you do whatever it is you do, you quote-unquote throw a load of clothes into the wash. Go back to your ancestors, your grandparents, your great-grandparents. They didn't throw a load of clothes in the wash. They had wash day. They washed all day to get the clothes clean. And next week they did it again. You don't devote 24 hours or a whole day to washing clothes. But they did. We just don't have to spend the amount of time anymore surviving. And so we have time. And now we have the question of what do we do with it. We want to explore that. There are other factors that account for our increased recreation. I mean, we have more discretionary wealth. We're not just taking in enough dimes and pennies to pay for the food we need for the winter any longer, and there's nothing left over. Most people in this society find money for the things we want. We'll talk more about that. And they're the trends of society. That is, everybody, all people's kids play sports, don't they? And that's the idea. That's where we've gone. They don't go out into the fields anymore like your grandparents' time. They go to the soccer field, rather than the cornfield. And there's an ever-growing commercialization of that. This is Sunday. It is football day. And how many millions of Americans, me included, okay, honestly, but how many millions of Americans are going to devote time to football? And when I say football, I mean American football. You guys know what I'm talking about. But there's the commercialization of recreational activities. And so, some would argue that we place too many demands on our time, though. We've got our demands for survival, and now we've got all these demands for recreation. And that's become a job in itself. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. So as we increase our leisure activity, we're defeating the original intended purpose. Now, I want you to go home with that thought. I just want you to think about that. Am I spending, here's the question, am I spending so much time, effort, mental, etc., on my recreation that it's now become such a job to me or such a huge block of time to me that it's defeating the purpose for which it was intended? And we're going to come back and talk about some of that. But if you're here today and you're not a Christian, you're not a child of God, I think you can see in a lesson even like this that our Lord cares for us. He wants us to be people who are rested, well, taken care of, and He would help us to do that. He wants us to be people who can perform, who can do what we need to do. He loves us. He cares about us. I believe if one is fair with the biblical idea of a Christian life, they see that overall, it is the best, healthiest, most satisfied life. And that's why people in this room that are Christians have chosen that life. Maybe you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, but you believe in Jesus, that He is the Son of God, and you're willing this morning to confess that. You'll repent. You'll change your life. You'll be baptized to have your sins washed away and begin your life with Christ. Maybe it is that you've done that and you look at your life and you say, my life isn't what it needs to be. I've not been living that life, and I want to live it starting today. We'll pray together with you so that you can do that. Please come while Ed leads us in this song.